It's fascinating. Somehow it works out that in this green season, this so-called ordinary time that we engage in, the Sundays after Pentecost, not ordinary because they're plain or simple. It's simply the way they've always been counted, the first Sunday after Pentecost, the second Sunday after Pentecost. Ordinary has referred to the way we count, like ordinal numbers, not cardinal numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, but ordinal, 1, 2, or 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th. That's how it ends. Ordinary time is a time for us to engage in reflection and thinking about how it is that God comes into the very daily nature of our lives and is present in the midst of that. And as such, we get some times during this green season, this long summer green season, where we begin to step through sort of particular books of the Bible. One of which right now is the letter to the Galatians. Last week had not been Holy Trinity Sunday, we would have heard the first 10 verses of Galatians, the letter to the Galatians. Today, our second reading is part of the second half of that first chapter. And over the next 5 weeks, we'll be hearing those passages out of this letter. This is a really important letter. Now, Luther writes two commentaries on this letter, one in 1519 and one in 1535. It's a fantastic letter. I wanted to spend some time this summer looking at it because it really begins to be an important part of life throughout Christianity, throughout the ages. If we had been, think back about a month or so ago, a month and a half ago, we were really kind of lucky in an unfortunate way. Because we live right where we do, we get both Pennsylvania stations and West Virginia stations. Which means that during the primary season, we got hammered with political ads. And this was for primaries. These are presumably people on the same side of the fence. And it was a slugfest. And it's been that way. That's the news story. When it comes to these primaries right now, it's a slugfest everywhere. And we see the incumbents just getting hammered. People just getting beat up by their own teammates. Right? We sit there and we shake our heads when sort of sports teams kind of turn in on themselves and they get angry. But then in politics, it's what gives politics a bad name. All the mudslinging and all of the... I didn't say that. He said this. This, my friends, is the letter of Galatians. The letter to the Galatians. The church in Galatia, Paul ended up there once when he was sick. And he spent some time with the congregation there. And then as Paul was wont to do, he moved on. And after he moved on, he had a group of folks come in. Group supposedly on the same side as him. Christians. And the mudslinging began. Well, Paul told you that? No. He's not listening right. He never got his authority from anybody. He's sort of a free agent out there. In the early church, there were kind of two factions within Christianity. There was a Jewish Christian sect, and there was sort of a Gentile Christian sect. And the Jewish Christian sect, in order to become Christian, you have to become Jewish first. You have to be circumcised. You have to follow the law. You have to follow the ceremonies. And then you can be baptized. Paul hears about this. And he writes this letter to Galatia. And normally he begins a letter. Letters back then were written in a very formulaic way. He sets up this letter. You start with who you are. And he says, Paul, an apostle, sent neither by human commission nor from human authorities, but through Jesus Christ and God the Father. I mean, that's his greeting. It's who I am, writing to you, to the churches of Galatia, he says. And he greets them with grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. Little opening blessing. And then he would normally write some very nice and flowery words. Well, he doesn't. He jumps right into it. In verse 6 in chapter 1, he says, I am astonished that you are so quickly deserting the one who called you in the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel. How quickly? Turn. You're going to turn from what I taught you and follow some other thing. He's cut. He feels horrible that they have abandoned this teaching. And so we get really the heart of what he's going to get at here in today's lesson, starting in verse 11, right? Because his dissenters are saying he's not authentic. He didn't get it. He has no authority. Because he didn't go and talk to the folks up in Jerusalem. They didn't get his seal of approval. He says, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that the gospel that was proclaimed to me is not of human origin, for I did not receive it from a human source, nor was I taught it, but I received it through a revelation of Jesus Christ. Think back. We're used to his conversion story, him traveling on the road to Damascus. Paul steps up, riding along, and all of a sudden, the bright, blinding light. And the word, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? A direct revelation of Jesus Christ. The risen Lord appears to Paul on the road to Damascus. Here is where Paul lays his authority. Not that he went and he talked to Peter. Not that he went and he had people touch base with him. He receives it directly from Jesus. Now, this poses a bit of a problem for us. Because in the Lutheran Church, we generally say, you know what? You can't be a pastor just on what you think. It can't just be, you know, God spoke to me. In fact, that's probably the quickest way to make sure you're never a pastor in the Lutheran Church. To say, God spoke to me. And I know I'm going to be a pastor. You might get through and you might not if you say that. Luther is very quick to point out in that situation, it didn't come just from Paul in his own head, right? The external comes first. The external word comes to Paul first by Jesus saying, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? There is something from outside of him coming to him. Not something that we think up in our own heads and say, oh, that's what it is. Or we refuse to test it out. Is it authentic? Is it genuine? But Paul relies on that. Paul relies on the external word, that revelation from Jesus Christ coming to him and saying, you are going to go to the Gentiles. You're the guy. And he says, so he does it. He heads out. Goes out and about. He becomes what we call the apostle to the Gentiles based on this. And his understanding is precisely that there is no need for anyone in being united to Christ to go through the statutes, the obligations, and the ceremonies of the law. And he quotes his own life story here. He says, "You've heard no doubt of my earlier life in Judaism. I was violently persecuting the Church of God and was trying to destroy it. I advanced in Judaism beyond many among people of the same age, for I was far more zealous for the traditions of my ancestors." He's the guy. In Judaism, he had it all together. In Judaism, he did everything right. He got all the achievements. He got straight A's. Every box was checked. I was dotted. T was crossed. He was a Pharisee among Pharisees. He says, that's not necessary anymore. He continues to root it in God's activity towards us. He deals with Peter. He deals with Peter when he realizes Peter is living contrary to the gospel. He requires Gentiles to become like Jews. Although he himself, we heard that story during Easter, where he says, "Truly, I understand that God shows no partiality." And he welcomes the Gentiles in among them and lives with them. But then he backs away. He kind of backtracks a little bit. He waffles a little bit, Peter. Paul challenges him. It is necessary for Paul to root everything in grace and faith. If we lay any obligation down, make any requirement in what it means to become Christian, we short-circuit the gospel. We tell another different gospel. I've gotten into arguments with family members who say, no, you have to have a conversion experience to be a Christian. I think conversion experiences are wonderful things, but they are not a condition. For if we make that a condition, then we have to do something. We have to be engaged in something. It removes God from being the first actor. We baptize. We believe in the baptism of children precisely because we feel there is nothing that we can do to be made right in relationship with God. And therefore, what greater sign than to have a child and baptize that one from the very beginning? There is no requirement. I certainly hope that was affirmation and not a negative commentary on what I just said. And I now realize that I am Bob's higher than me. I was gonna say I'm now the tallest person in the room, and if lightning's coming, it's coming. Well, but Bob's up there next to a whole bunch of metal pipes, so maybe I'm safe. Paul wants this all rooted in grace. Every single word of it. No ceremonies, no obligations, no traditions, nothing. It is precisely and always God's activity. And it is precisely God's activity that has claimed him as an apostle. That grace and that proclamation of the gospel is the one that takes the one who persecutes the church and turns it into its most vocal and prolific apostle. The bulk of the New Testament is Paul's writing. We have four Gospels, but more is written by Paul than anyone else. The grace of God can take the one who hates and change his heart, change his mind, change his very being to be one who is for. This is not political waffling, this is conversion. I mean, why would he leave Judaism to become an outcast if he had not been grasped by this grace, this gospel? We don't know, actually, anything that happened to this congregation in Galatia. But we do know that this letter was evidently important enough for people to save. That this letter has lasted and endured throughout the centuries, the millennia. Continues to be a source of life as Paul gets to the root of the gospel. How great it would be if all of us could have that direct revelation from Jesus, experience him on the road. But Paul's revelation, the proclamation of the gospel, continues to be saved and kept in this letter for us, so that we may hear of his revelation. We may hear of the necessity of justification by grace through faith. That we can continue to hear of the dangers of other gospels being proclaimed. That we can continue to hear the word. And as we continue to proclaim and preach this gospel through Paul, we still hear this risen Christ coming not just to Paul, but to each and every one of us. With proclamations of grace and forgiveness that seek to transform our hearts and our minds. Gathers us today as we saw our Sunday school students beginning in their footsteps here with this relationship with Jesus, to be able to sing and to proclaim this of this love. It's this connection with Jesus that comes to our graduates today. To know that as Paul was traveling down along the road, Christ was there with them. With him, he is in the same way through their union in the waters of baptism, there with them as they go out now on their roads. To unknown futures, futures of promise. Paul is constantly out there and traveling. We are also always out and about in our lives, traveling and meeting people. And we know that God has called us to be proclaimers of his gospel, of his good news, that we are loved, that we are cherished, and we are sent to be bearers of that also, so that others may hear. And it's important for us not to lay obstacles in front. Say, oh good, you want to do that? Well, first you got to do X, Y, and Z. And we gather together And when we hear the gospel, we respond to it graciously, so that we may proclaim it graciously. Thanks be to God.
Amen.